Psycho Man.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to episode 432 of the Motorcycle Man podcast and another interview for your listening pleasure. Hey, joining me today in the V-Twin Cafe is our good friend Brian Honeycutt, and he is here to tell us all about what it's like to ride up to Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. That's an interesting story. You might want to stick around for that. But first, before we get into that, the Motorcycle Man podcast is brought to you by Scorpion Helmets. Now, they're offering high-quality, innovative motorcycle helmets and technical apparel at an incredible value. So to learn more, visit ScorpionUSA.com and get yourself a wonderful helmet from Scorpion Helmets. And Wild Ass Seats, now you can improve your comfort and ability to stay in the saddle longer with a cushion from Wild Ass Seats. So if you're tired of those painful pressure points and fatigue, get on over to wild-ass.com and tell the real Craig Johnson that the Motorcycle Man podcast sent you over and tell him you want a cushion to make your ass more supple. Do it. And of course, as always, Tobacco Motorwear. For the best in casual riding gear for men and women, there's only one place you should be going, and that's Tobacco Motorwear. Visit them at tobaccomotorwear.com. That's tobaccomotorwear.com, all one word. And our listeners will get 10% off your order when you use the code MOTOMEN. Everyone here at the podcast is wearing Tobacco riding jeans, California riding shirt. Hey, I use those Roper gloves. I love them. Listen, I can't tell you how wonderful these products are. I wear them for every ride. I won't ride without them. And if you want to get some of this stuff, you can also get it at the Motorcycle Men website at motomenpc.com and go over to the shop page and you can order yourself some Tobacco Motorwear stuff. Good stuff. Your safety is worth it, kids. So get on over there to Tobacco Motorwear and get in Dave's pants. All right, time now for that interview with Brian. Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to the Motorcycle Man podcast. We are at episode 432, and joining me today to talk about some amazing things is our good friend Brian Honeycutt. How you doing, Brian?
Good. How you doing, Ted? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, quite all right. Thank you. Actually, it was your contact that actually sparked this whole thing. But we're here to talk about a very interesting trip you just took, and I think I want to go on record as saying I think this is everybody's bucket list trip. Would you think the same thing? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I've stopped to back it up what I experienced. So
yeah. Well, hey. So for those of you who know who you are, why don't you tell us who you are, what you do, and what you're riding.
So yeah, I'm Brian Honeycutt. I'm 55 years old. I drive a fuel truck in San Francisco Bay Area. I'm an avid motorcycle rider. I do a lot of track stuff, off-road stuff, touring, long distance, iron butt stuff. I'll do anything on a motorcycle. In fact, I only own a motorcycle at this point. So
really? What are you riding?
Yep. So I sold all the race bikes and all the other bikes and my car. I bought a brand new 2025 BMW R1300 GS Adventure.
Wow, look at you going big time. Damn.
Yep.
So now you recently went on this epic trip. So why don't you give us a brief from and to of the trip?
Yeah, so it's Alaska. So I'm an over the road truck driver. I was. So I've been to every state but Alaska. And on my 50th birthday in 2020, I was going to do this Alaska trip, which COVID shut the borders down. So that got sidelined. In the meantime, I got married and me and my wife have been doing European motorcycle tours. And this year she took the year off. She was going to go back to bodybuilding. So I figured I'd buy a new bike and go to Alaska. So that's what I did.
Now, is this something that you always wanted to do?
Since I started following motorcycle world travelers, they all go to Prudhoe Bay to start out their trip down the Pan American Highway to Australia, Argentina.
Right.
So I figured I would like, if I'm going to Alaska, I might as well go to Prudhoe Bay.
Wow. No. You know, it's funny. I hear so many guys saying, like, they're just going to go to Alaska and they just, like, you know, they're going to hit, you know, Anchorage or Fairbanks. Was that your original intent, or did you just wanted to go all the way up to the Arctic Circle?
No, if you're going, you might as well go to Prudhoe Bay.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess you would. Now, as far as it goes for your planning for this trip, did you spend a lot of time planning And what was the most difficult part of that planning?
So my main planning was listening to podcasts of motorcycle people who have done the trip, mm-hmm. and also tour operators. They've said, you know, the earlier you go in June, mid-June is the best because there's less rain.
Really?
There's less construction. The mosquitoes aren't as active. But most people go in July and August, but there's a lot more rain and there's a lot more construction. And the construction, after experiencing, I see what we're talking about.
Oh, really? Now, this is mostly construction on the Dalton Highway, I imagine.
No, it's construction throughout British Columbia, Yukon, and Alaska.
Right, it's like this, like road repairs and stuff?
Yeah, and again, the road repair, if you think about the frost heaves, especially the closer you get to Alaska. So when those roads heave up upwards of 3 feet, they
Whoa.
Just fill, so they fill it with gravel. So it turns into a gravel road.
Right.
So just to make it to Alaska, you have to be comfortable with riding enough gravel. And it is deep. It's that road leading up to Beaver Creek, Yukon, up to, like, I call it the front gate of Alaska.
Yeah.
It's, you're looking at, you know, a mile long in sections of deep gravel.
When you say deep gravel, what do you mean deep gravel?
I didn't get off and stick my foot in it, but I'm talking, you know, my back tire. And again, I'm a motocross guy, so when I hit deep gravel, I just lean back and hammer the throttle and make sure the front end doesn't plow into it and take foot pegs too.
But you're sinking in, though.
Yeah, but you keep the back, keep power on. That way the weight transfers to the back wheel,
sure.
And then you steer using your foot pegs, weight to foot pegs. because if you try to just direct steer with the front wheel, it's got no traction.
Oh yeah, it's got
it'll plow, and then you just kind of, you know, I put my fingers up on the top of the controls and let the bike do what it's going to do.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
It's jerking all over. So I mean, if you're not comfortable with that, I've seen people on Harleys doing it. It didn't look fun, and they were going slow and had their feet down, but it's a long ways.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's the problem. And it's kind of the training wheels for the Dalton Highway. My experience with the Dalton Highway, it was fun. There was nothing scary or dangerous about it. It was actually fun. But I'm glad I went. Hang on. Okay. But anyways, I was glad to actually get that bike comfortable on it in the deep gravel. So,
you know, I've talked to, over the years, I've talked to two people. You're the third person who's actually done a trip to Alaska. And they all said the same thing, that the Dalton Highway wasn't scary, but it had the potential to be just sloppy and just nasty the entire way.
I imagine it could be with rain, but in my case, wherever the water truck was, it was actually welcome. It was. I added extra traction to it without being slipped.
Oh wow!
So in my 8 days, I experienced no rain at all, zero.
Really? Well, lucky you.
And when I got into Washington, I was hoping for rain because I was wearing an Aerostitch suit and I was covered in dust. You know, everything's dirty, dusty. It's probably the most dirty I've ever been in my life.
Oh wow! Did this route plan itself, really?
Yeah, and again, so I drive a truck in the Bay Area, so as far as my route planning, it's Google Maps because it's active. It'll adjust for different slowdowns. It'll give you a, so I always use that.
Right.
So on the bike, I had no idea what route I was going.
Oh,
generally.
Really? Would you say you were just winging it?
Yeah, but that's what I do. I plan on the motorcycle, but and I had 8 gallons of fuel, so I had a range of 300 miles.
Wow.
So I didn't really plan fuel stops, and that almost bit me in the ass a couple of times.
Really?
Because I'm just like, I'll make it to the next interchange. There's got to be fuel there. And there was, but I was down to, like, you know, range of maybe a mile or so. So I was right there. So
now, did you have, aside from, well, you got a 6 gallon capacity on your bike, right?
Eight gallons.
Oh, it's a capacity. I thought you were carrying jerry cans with you.
No, that's why I bought the GSA. It's 8 gallons.
Really? No kidding. So, oh, geez.
So it's got a range of about, depending on your speed, about 300.
Damn. So you stretched that to the limit.
I did.
Now, I got to ask. Well, you're on the Dalton Highway. Are there places to get fuel on or off the Dalton Highway?
So there's the standard. There's Coldfoot Camp. Mm-hmm. They've got fuel. And then you've got to, so if you make it, if you go up to Dalton and there is fuel there. So you have to go to Coldfoot Camp, and out of Anchorage, out of Fairbanks, it's about, I don't know, 200 miles. But from Coldfoot Camp to Dalton, to Prudhoe Bay, there's nothing.
Really?
And I mean literally nothing. There's a couple, I don't know, there was a couple, like, maintenance garages for, like, right. vehicles. But there's no infrastructure to speak of.
Really? Okay. And how many right? miles are we talking?
240 miles.
So, if you don't have the range, you better have extra gas with you.
So, for example, there was a guy, he's doing the whole Prudhoe Bay to Yishui, Argentina. Right. He's from New York City. So, he's an ex-security police forces guy, and I was security police, so we kind of had a bond. He was talking, and he went with me up to Prudhoe Bay. But we had a sustained 50 knot headwind and about 70 knot gust.
What?
Right? So he ran out of fuel 18 miles from Prudhoe Bay. So I always carry, you know, basic on the bike is puncture repair kit, yeah. with an air compressor and a tow strap. So I've towed a lot of motorcycles, and the tow strap will get you out of anything. A car will pull over the shoulder of the highway and say, "Can I help you?" Yeah, book this on the trailer hitch, take me to the next exit. So those things are invaluable to have. So I towed him 18 miles in town.
Wow, okay. Well,
yeah, so I mean, with a puncture repair kit and a tow strap, you can pretty much fix, I mean, get out of trouble.
Yeah.
So.
Was there any part of the route that proved to be difficult or presented a challenge for your riding abilities or technical abilities?
No, and again, I would say if you're planning this route, you know, get really familiar with deep gravel, how that works. Right? I mean, and if you're a guy that gravel's not your thing, going to Alaska's not your thing. Don't go to the Yukon either. So. Really? BC, you could pretty much navigate every place without gravel. Right. But I'm telling you, where the roads are being constructed, they leveled out with gravel. And then they apparently must let the traffic run over it for months. And then at the end of the year, they seal coat it.
Okay.
Because those roads, they are sealed at some point. They do have centerline markers and edge markers. At some point, they do. And on the Dalton Highway, they're going after a dirt gravel mix. Fine gravel dirt mix. That's you can see that's the sweet spot. That's what they're looking for. But when it's got big potholes, they just fill with gravel and let the vehicles beat it down. You know, and the fuel trucks going up to Prudhoe Bay, you know, they make oil, but they don't have a refiner up there, so they have to have fuel coming in. And those things they're running 120,000 pounds gross.
Oh yeah, and, you know, and the thing is, I've heard people tell me that the amount of trucks that are on that road is astounding. Did you come across that?
Yeah, obviously it's 70%. You know that pipeline is what Alaska is built on.
Yeah,
that pipeline. That pipeline goes from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez. There's no breaks between there, so everything has to be brought in to Prudhoe Bay. There's probably anywhere from 500 to 1,000 people actively working up there at any point. And they either fly in, most of them fly in, they're on rotation, so there's an airport up there. But fuel truck drivers, people hauling groceries, hauling supplies, you know, that's their steady thing. And it's that TV show, Ice Road Truckers. That's exactly. The road, right? So, yeah. And so when I left Saturday, there was just a snow melt, and it washed that road out. Really? Now I know that road's vital to that, the oil production, so they're going to get it figured out. So I was like, I'll get there and see how it is. And my planning went, I was leaving Saturday at 10 a.m. I got off Saturday morning at like 5 a.m., slept for 5 hours, then took off. And I scheduled a hotel in the North Pole, Alaska, which is Fairbanks, for Monday night.
Okay.
So I was kind of, I pushed myself. I had 48 hours to make it to Fairbanks. And it's 2,900 miles.
How many miles?
2,900. It's exactly the same. It's exactly the same as San Francisco to New York City for that Cannonball Baker run.
No way, really?
So I was like, if I can do that, I can do this, right? So,
yeah.
So, and actually, with the roads in BC and in the Yukon, you just can't make any time. It's all two-lane highway.
Oh, really? No kidding. Oh,
so,
wow.
So there's the Trans-Canada Highway that goes from basically Vancouver to Montreal.
Right.
And that's it's a 4-lane highway.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've been on it if you up there. But if you go north of that, it's all 2-lane roads.
And a lot of that is probably gravel.
You don't experience the gravel until you get to far northern BC and Yukon. The Yukon's a lot of gravel.
Wow, man. Oh, geez. Now, so you left from your home in California.
Back to California.
Right. And so then Oregon, Washington, and then you're in Canada. Now,
right.
How long was this trip? It was 8 days, you said?
It was 8 days. It ended up being like 6,800 miles.
Okay. How many miles a day did you do? Did you have a goal? I want to do this many miles per day, or was it like accommodation to accommodation kind of a thing?
So the first challenge was to make it to Fairbanks in 2 days. Right?
Okay.
So that's going to have to be over 1,500 miles a day. And actually, I did not achieve that. I got like 1,450 one day, 1,380 the next day. And then I made up for it Monday. I didn't get back. Didn't get to the hotel until 9 p.m.
So you were doing nearly a bun burner every day?
Close. Really close at the beginning of it.
No kidding. Damn. So this wasn't a leisurely ride for you. You were.
No, I'm on a time schedule. You know, I would like to. I don't want to. I've got 3 weeks vacation. But I took 2 weeks off. I didn't want to burn it all up.
Oh, I see.
Hotel stay in Alaska at this time of year is expensive. I got the cheapest place I could find, which was $250 a night.
Right? $250 a night?
Right.
Holy crap, man. Now, so camping was that out of the question, correct?
So I brought one of those reclining lawn chairs, which is essentially a cot.
Okay.
Now what I underestimated was the mosquitoes at Coldfoot Camp. And again, I was gonna leave the North Pole, go to Prudhoe Bay and turn around and come back and do 1,000 miles in 24 hours on the Dalton Highway. That was the plan. However, the Saturday I left, the road got washed out.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And it was 80 feet deep and 40 foot across.
What?
And there was two sections of it. Yeah, it's completely washed out. So they had to actually fly drainage culvert up there and set those in the helicopter.
Oh,
just to start backfilling it. And of course, that road has to be open. So anyways, they got so I got to the North Pole Monday night, and then Tuesday morning I was like, well, I'm just gonna go up as far as I can,
yeah,
and turn around and come back. So I got on the Dalton Highway, and the Dalton Highway is Highway 2 in Alaska. You just go past Fairbanks and it just turns into the Dalton Highway, which is really cool. And it was dry. The dirt sections were almost blue grooved at a point. It was like my own personal racetrack. I was doing 100 miles an hour on that thing. You know,
wow.
It might be one of the top 10 rides I've ever had that first day on the Dalton Highway. And the deep gravel, you know, I was leaning back, hammering the throttle, blasting through it, just having a great time. And the only issue was if you carry so much speed in a corner, you know, you can't really steer if you're not direct steering.
Of course.
So I got to the Arctic Circle, took the picture of the sign, and then continued on, got to Coldfoot Camp, got gas, paid for gas. It's kind of convoluted. You got to pay for your gas first. But anyways, some guys started asking me about the bike, and I was like, yeah, I got to go. And they're like, we're waiting until tomorrow. It's going to open tomorrow. And I was like, it is? Yeah, it's going to open tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
So why go up to the break, turn around, and go back? I didn't really prove anything. So I called my wife. I was like, hey, do you think I should take a delay and hang out with these guys and wait till tomorrow? So that's what I did.
Oh, okay.
So I started talking to them. There was about 10 motorcyclists, three of which were doing starting their ride from Prudhoe Bay to Ushuaia, Argentina. Three separate guys, didn't know each other, were just randomly there at that day.
Oh, okay.
So that's the amount of people that do it. One guy was from that Jordan guy that I became friends with from New York City. There was a guy that had just gotten out of the Israeli Air Force. He was doing it. And there was a guy from Australia that was doing it.
Wow. So I was going to ask you that. So how many other motorcyclists did you see on this trip? going up through that whole way up to...
So I'll say the actual people that I contacted in Cold Foot Camp was probably 15. The actual people I seen in route going back, I probably seen 40 or 50 people.
No kidding.
Now, they were on adventure bikes. So they looked like they were ready for it. So I'm assuming that's where they were headed. So this is a big thing. This isn't just random people. I would say if you went to Cold Foot, and I was talking to people that work there, every day they see anywhere from 10 to 20 motorcyclists doing exactly this.
Oh, wow. Damn.
It's a big thing. So I would say as far as the tourists go on that road, over 50% are motorcyclists.
That's crazy. Wow.
And the rest are people in RVs, cars, or trailers, or the tour operators that have like a bus of 15 people.
No kidding. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But no, and like I said, the road was out, so there were people that were on a tour and they wanted to see it, so they were chartering airplanes. Oh. Push points, take them up there and bring them back.
How long did you stay at Prudhoe Bay?
Not long. So I stayed at Cold Foot Camp. So I got there at probably noon, and I stayed there until the following 8 a.m. And here's the thing at Cold Foot Camp. If you're going to plan to stay there, buy a room and figure out a way to sleep, because it's 24 hours of daylight, and there's always activity. And the mosquitoes are, like, I've been around mosquitoes, but this is something I've never experienced. I bought the best spray available. And it stops them for about a minute, but then they just push through it. So you have to have something to protect from mosquitoes. A tent works great. I didn't think I would need that. I thought if I laid a lawn, and I had my Aerosmith suit on, and I had that beekeeper type mask on.
Yeah.
And it was okay, but any time that net draped towards your skin, they stung right through it. You know, it was constant. I really didn't get any sleep.
Wow. Yeah, I've heard stories where guys would literally sleep in all of their clothes and basically have a bag over their head the entire time they were there. But
that's essentially what I had, but it was like noon daylight whole time.
Of course.
And there's trucks coming in there getting fuel. There's people yelling. Like, it's active. There's a lot of stuff going on at that camp.
Go ahead.
And then the next morning, about 8 o'clock, I headed out. Other guys had left. I was just doing it by myself. And I got close to where the road was shut down. And I seen the guy from New York City. He's on the Yamaha T7. And he's like, there's no place to hang out out there. There's no place to hang out. And I'm thinking, hang out where? Like, you're out in the middle of anywhere anyways. And I was like, there's some bicycles I seen down by the river. I'm going to see if they need help. They looked like they were working on something. So we went back there and hung out with them. And they were actually cooking breakfast. They were on bicycles from Prudhoe Bay to Fairbanks. They said it would take them 8 days.
Oh,
jeez. There's a lot of elevation. There's a mountain range called the Adigan Pass. And that's the real big push up there. So it drops down to maybe 30 degrees from in the surrounding areas, about 80 degrees.
Wow. And so how was the weather, temperature-wise? How was that?
It was anywhere from 88 degrees to 26 degrees.
Really? 88 degrees?
Yep. 88. Fairbanks was 88.
And what was the temperature like up at Prudhoe Bay?
So Prudhoe Bay was interesting. The temperature was 50, according to my thermometer. But the wind was blowing 50 knots sustained and about 70 knot gust.
So
it was
coming off the ocean.
And of course, the Arctic Ocean is frozen, so we're looking at zero. We're looking at 32 degrees. So it was probably realistically with the wind chill 40, but it seemed like it was 20 degrees. It was cold.
Did you step into the Arctic Ocean?
I did not. You did. I had no. The guy was was going to do it. We had no desire. I can't express how miserable that place is. It's the single most miserable place I've ever been.
Really? Oh, jeez. Yeah,
it's dirty. It's frozen. Like, and we were looking for a restaurant, and you're looking for a standalone restaurant, which doesn't exist. Don't look for one. You go to the hotels. That's where the restaurant part. I was looking for one, and I was kind of on the side of the road where there's a parking lot.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people working, so you're kind of in their way. But I'm looking at my phone, and I'm looking at the place, And that track that I'm on, that tire track, is frozen. And I didn't realize it. And there's a hard edge. So it's like running up against the curb. So the bike got tripped, right? Like, so I got tripped over, and then BMW has a SOS button that calls somebody in Germany, apparently. I don't know. They're trying to contact me if I'm okay. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. So, I mean, that made it miserable. It was just miserable, everything about it. Then we went to the Dead Horse store and tried to get some swag, and it's all sold out.
Oh, jeez.
We did eat at the Aurora Hotel. We got there at 3:30 and waited until 4:30 for the buffet. But they make you wear booties on your shoes anywhere you go in. And then they make you wear gloves anytime you're handling food. It's really strange. It's a strange place. Like, I would recommend, if anybody's going to do it, I mean, the best way to do it is one shot from Fairbanks up and back.
Yeah,
because if you stay there, you just can't get any sleep. That's the issue.
That would bother the crap out of me, man. Holy crap.
Yeah, and I was fully planning on going back to Fairbanks, but by the time I got to Coldfoot Camp, I was exhausted and just over it. So I was like, I'm going to buy a shower. So I paid $14 for a shower. The shower was in a room. And I just took a shower, and I laid down on the bed for about 3 hours.
Oh, there you go. Hey, at least it's something.
Right, so I kind of got a room for $14. But and then I probably left there at 5 a.m., got back into Fairbanks. I was planning to go to Dawson City, which is top of the road highway. Yeah. But that was on fire. It was shut down.
It was on fire.
So I was just kind of thoroughly over it. So I went back to North Pole to the same hotel, got a room. Room wasn't ready, so I went and got something to eat, and then stayed that night, and then beelined it back. And I was going to go back through Montana, but I'm like, kind of like you with the Key West thing.
Yeah.
Get a picture of a buoy. 2 hours, it's not really worth it. That's kind of how I was at the end of the day. I was just like, I'm so over this. I'll come back.
So, well, I get the impression, I was going to ask you, is like, what was your feelings after you got to finally reach Prudhoe Bay? Was this, did you have this feeling of, yay, I did it? Or did you just go like, why am I here?
Yeah, it's more like, why are you here? I mean, anybody can do it. It's just gravel. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
It's not a major, I mean, yeah, you're as far as you can go in North America on the road. I get it. But, you know, once you get there, and the northern part of Alaska is not the pretty part of Alaska.
It's mostly flat, barren.
It's rolling. It's big rolling hills with a lot of pine trees and stuff. And then once you get up to the Arctic Circle, it's just flat tundra.
Yeah, tundra.
Then you have that mountain range you can call the Attica Pass.
Right. Now,
but it looks like.
But on this trip, but did you plan for any eventualities of anything, like, you know, mechanical things or crashes? How did you plan for that stuff, or did you?
Yeah, like I say, I always carry a puncture repair kit. Right. I brought tools, so I've been servicing the bike. I changed the oil. So anything I've done on the bike, I make sure I have tools to do specifically that.
Right.
Get wheels off. I brought tire levers because I was going to change the tire around, like. Reverse the back tire to get more traction if I needed it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need to. But so those were the things. And again, I carry a toe strap.
Okay. Well, so did you have any mechanicals along the way?
I had a tire puncture. So I got, when I came back down, I got to the Yukon state line. So I think it was Alaska Welcome Center, and there's a picture of the Yukon. And I looked, I had a screw in the tire. Now, I balanced my own tires, then I put something called Ride-On. It's a tire sealant, kind of like bicycles with the, you know, tire sealant.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
In case you do have a puncture, go seal it. And I seen that. I thought maybe it'll last me all the way home, right? But I got almost the White Horse Yukon, and the valve started flashing because it's got tire monitoring. So I was like, oh, I got to stop and plug that. So I stopped and plugged that. It wasn't an issue. And as far as planning, you know, on the eight. I thought this would be 8,000 miles. It turned out to be 6,800 miles. I was looking for tires that would last that long.
Oh, okay. And
so, so those Botas Tractionator GPS is what I picked. They said they last 12,000-20,000 miles.
Yeah.
And actually, the rear tire is pretty much done at this point. It's just because I'm really heavy on the throttle going through the gravel.
No.
So, yeah, I mean, there was points on the Dalton where we were running 90 miles.
Well, I'm sure the gravel didn't help, you know, as far as it goes for your tire longevity. I'm sure that didn't help at all.
And it's not the gravel itself. It's just being that bike's heavy. It's probably loaded. It's probably, we're looking at probably 700 pounds. So, right. And I'm heavy on the throttle. And there's no law enforcement to speak of. There's no rescue services. It's all, you know, workers up there and tour people.
And you're on your own.
Yeah, you're 100% on your own. And I did get a Garmin, like, what are those small trackers. I didn't have one of those.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. What'd you
Garmin, Garmin. Garmin InReach.
Oh, yeah, the InReach. That seems pretty cool. Yeah. Did you use the GPS as well on your way up, right? Or whole trip?
So I usually use my cell phone, and then I have one of those those 7-inch tablets to mirror it on my handlebars. That way, I found it in a soaking rain, even a quad lock won't charge your phone. It'll say there's water present.
Yeah.
So I've got, on the GSA, there's a little compartment you can stick your phone in.
Right.
So if it's really raining, I stick it in there. But it's nice to have that little tablet that's mirrored on your phone.
Right.
And whenever I didn't have cell phone service, I would switch it out to I've got a Garmin GPS, so I would stick in there.
Yeah.
But primarily, there's really no navigation to speak of, especially in Alaska. It's just straight highway.
Oh, okay.
It's Highway 2.
Oh, all right. What did you do about food along the way?
So before I left, I bought a bunch of stuff to keep in the top box and my tank bag. So I ate out of that.
Yeah.
Pretty much like squeezable peanut butter, anything you find in a squeeze pouch.
Oh, so you didn't actually have any, well, there's up there, there's really no places to sit and have a dinner.
I mean, there is at the major towns.
Yeah. But aside from that, no.
Right. And then I had like a half gallon jug hooked up to a straw and then another gallon jug that I could, so I had a gallon and a half of water capacity.
Okay. So you didn't have like a Camelback on or anything like that?
No, I've used Camelbacks in the past, but hours and hours cutting into your shoulders, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And there's no need for it.
Yeah.
So I just run basically a Camelback hooked to a stainless steel half gallon can.
All right. Wow.
And there's a gallon also, so you can switch back and forth. But.
Yeah. Okay. So how loaded up was your bike?
You know, I brought minimum clothes. Most of it was riding clothes. I had some base layer, then I had like those down snow pants, down jacket. And I did actually need them. And I had a heated jacket. I had heated gloves, but I put hippo hands on the bike. You yeah. familiar with that? Those things are, they're as ugly as they work good, right? So, the same as an Arrow Stitch. An Arrow Stitch suit is ugly, but man, does it work good.
I mean, it's that's what matters.
And you're basically living in a sleeping bag. So that's one thing I had. That's the thing I had. I had that camping chair. And I did sleep in it a few times. It was good. First aid kit, you know, had all that.
Yeah.
Nothing else. No, basically that's it.
Yeah, so you weren't totally bogged down with gear and all that stuff like that. So...
No, and a lot of that stuff. I wouldn't bring. I've had too many clothes. I had like three pairs of underwear. I could have got by one or two. Like just take a shower and wash it when you're washing it. So
there you
that
go,
microfiber type stuff.
Yeah, why not? So, that works. So now,
and the only problem I did have was the border crossing into Canada.
Really?
Yeah. This is a funny story. And another thing, I was using the external catheter to like try that out for the iron butt stuff. So okay. I didn't stop for that. So I come in and it's Huntingdon, British Columbia. It's across from Stumas. It's back in behind, it's in Washington. So as I come across about 1 a.m., there's another car in front of me. They roll right in. They must be Canadian. So I come up, show my passport. He's like, where are you headed to? And I said, Fairbanks. Where are you headed to right now? It's almost 1 a.m. And I said, Fairbanks. So let me get this straight. You're just driving straight to Fairbanks. And I said, yeah. And he goes, what route? And I go, I don't know, whatever the GPS tells me to take. So, you know, where are you planning on going right now? And I said, I'm going to Fairbanks. You know, if I get tired along the way, I've got a chair to sleep in. A chair. And I said, yeah. Are you going to camp? And I said, I could. He said, do you have a tent? I said, no, I have a bivy bag. A bivy bag. And I said, yes. And then he said, okay, so do you have any... "Do you have any weapons?" And I said, "No, I have no weapons." "You don't have bear spray?" And I said, "I do not have bear spray." "And you're going across Yukon at this time of year?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm not stopping for bears." Okay, so let me get this straight. When did you leave your house in California?" And I said, "At 10 o'clock. "How fast were you going?" "It's 1 o'clock. And I said, "No, 10 o'clock a.m. "So you've been driving since 10 a.m. And I said, "Yeah, I work at night, you know, just like you do." Okay, park in lane one and come inside. So I came inside.
They didn't believe anything you were saying.
They were doing a lot of background checking, and then they said, "Come around the corner and start emptying your pockets and taking your clothes off until we tell you to stop."
No way.
Okay. So I started emptying the thing, and we're just talking, and I said, "Look, I deliver fuel in the San Francisco Bay Area overnight. You work every night." "Every night that I work, I do." "So you work at night?" And I said, "Yeah, just like you guys do. Well, we're performing official duties." And I was like, so do I. Like, yeah. So they were just confused about me working at night. And then they asked me if I had a Twit card. I said, "I do. I didn't bring it with me. I'm not working." "Well, you should have brought it with you." And I was like, "But that's a TSA card. Why? It's a U.S. card. Why do you guys care about it?"
Yeah, really.
And then they told me to put my stuff back on. Luckily, they didn't see the catheter I had on it. There would have been further questions, I'm sure. And they went outside and checked the motorcycle. It took them about 40 minutes, and they came back in. That's pretty good. That was an hour and a half delay. I didn't expect that would have.
Wow.
That was interesting.
Damn. So, now, listen, so you're done riding in Alaska and you're back through British Columbia and stuff, and you said you did want to go to Montana. Why did you want to go to Montana? Just because?
They said, so because of the routing, if you look at it on Google Maps, it's only 2 hours out of the way.
Okay. So you just wanted to go there.
I was going to go that way and go through Glacier National Park, go through Highway to the Sun, Road to the Sun.
But at that point, you were done. You just wanted to go home, right?
Yeah, I was going to go to Dawson Creek just to get the picture of the start of the Alcan Highway. And
right.
I was over that too, so I just turned south and headed the most direct home.
So now, once you got back into, well, we'll call it the hustle and bustle of everyday life after you got back there, how did that feel? I mean, did you feel like crowded and... I don't know. Were you happy to be back, or were you melancholy over? Or yeah, any melancholy set in, or you could do? Oh, the trip is over.
I stopped at Bellingham, Washington, to wash the motorcycle, and then got something to eat. And as soon as I got on I-5 headed to Seattle, I was like, "Oh yeah, this is what roads are supposed to be like." You make you know, and I split lanes in Washington, and some of the Washington drivers weren't particularly happy with that. But
yeah,
it was nice. It was nice to be on a major freeway.
And back in civilization, right?
Back where you can operate normally. You know, a two-lane road, and here's another thing. The Alaska-Canadian Highway was on fire when I was there. So they kind of post an advisory up that the road's on fire. Be careful. So I got to a point where there's fire on either side of the road. I'd stop because the fire is actively jumping across the road.
Jesus.
But there's a lot of wild animals in just east of Watson Lake, there's a lot of bison.
Yeah.
And those bison were on the road, and they kind of went into Slip Canyon. So they're in a Slip Canyon because, you know, it's a big, like a wall on one side, a lake on the other side. So there's no fire camping there. So they just kind of had a rest haven there, you know. So there was anything from bear to bison to elk to moose. I seen one wolf in the pack. They're all on the road, kind of like hanging out for the night. Pretty interesting. So I had to like weave my bike through there. It's about 26 degrees, so I was going to stop and rest, but it was too cold to rest. That was about 1:30 in the morning.
Oh my god.
But it's remarkable how little traffic is on the Alcan Highway.
Oh, that's awesome though. Damn,
it's still so much.
Yeah. Were you sad that it was over? Were you sad that the trip was over?
No, I was.
You were glad it was over.
I'm never going back to Alaska.
I was just going to ask you. So it's been there, done that. I'm through with that crap, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the kind of person I am. You know, last year, me and my wife did the Dolomites and the Stelvio Pass and all that.
Right.
I've done it.
Okay.
It was awesome. It's the best road in the world. I know where it's at. I won't go back.
But really, it's really, so it didn't like thrill you enough that I got to do that again. And I was like,
No, and we talked this morning. My wife's like, if I ever did that, I would fly into Anchorage and rent a motorcycle, just do loops. Yeah, that would be reasonable. What I did was unreasonable because that's just the kind of person I am, you know? I mean, the longest I've ever done on a motorcycle straight is during COVID. I did 1,740 miles in 24 hours.
Oh, my God.
And that's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
But it's just trying to see what you can do, you know?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. Let's see if I can do this.
And the Iron Butt rally is going on currently, and I was like, it's going on right now. So I was like, this will be my one trip to see if I would want to do that.
Have you done the Iron Butt rally?
No, I have not.
Do you want to?
After this, no, I'm good.
You're done.
I'm kind of over it.
So like the Hoka Hay Challenge is not even a consideration then, huh?
No, I mean, I'll do a local rally. Like, I don't mind doing a 24-hour ride forever. Like this much you can do in 24 hours, but 11 days straight of it's just too much.
That's a little bit too much. Just a tad. Now, you also do a lot of track stuff. Because I've seen a lot. Now, would you say that's one of the things you do most of? Aside from the long distance stuff, but track driving?
No, I do normal rides.
Yeah.
So I only have a motorcycle. I go to Walmart the most on the motorcycle. So, I mean, but I'll do anything. You know, on a weekend, I'll go. You know, I live in probably the best place to ride motorcycles in the world. I've been everywhere. This is the best place.
Yeah.
Split lanes. People are courteous to you. And like I said, you can be in Tahoe skiing one hour, and in 3 hours, you can be surfing on the beach, you know?
Wow.
So it's nice to go from the mountains to the beach.
Any other plans for any big long journeys, or are you through with that? I know you got one. You got to have another one in you.
No, me and my wife plan on doing Baja.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's pretty cool. That's neat.
Yeah, Baja's deep.
Hey, how can anybody like learn more about your trip?
You can go on Facebook and Brian Honeycutt. It's a guy with a motorcycle. You'll see.
Okay. So,
that's where I post most stuff, and that's basically stuff about what I do.
Awesome. Any closing words or advice you might want to give to somebody who might consider a trip like this?
No, a tow strap's really invaluable. It's something most people don't know about. Learn how to tow a bike. Learn how to repair your tires. A couple of those guys had no idea how to repair their own tires, which is amazing. Guy had a T7 with tubes, and I said, have you ever took a wheel off? No. You're going to. You know, you're going to have to. That's something you'll have to do.
Yeah.
So just learn basic maintenance. Like going up to Prudhoe Bay, everybody had inverted cartridge forks. They all leaked. So having a seal saver to get the dirt out is a good idea.
Right.
If you don't know about a seal saver, learn how to use a seal saver. They're cheap tools. And learn how to puncture your tire. Learn how to repair punctures on your tire. But other than that, and basically general motorcycle stuff, you know, learn how to trail brake. If you don't know about trail braking, you need to learn. Take Yamaha Champ School, stuff like that.
All right.
There's basic stuff that I think is lacking in the motorcycle community as far as rider safety.
And don't expect to sleep. Right?
Yeah. I mean, everybody's different. I sleep really well at different hours, and I could not sleep up there.
All right, Brian. Thank you very much for being on the show, telling us about your trip up to Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. Greatly appreciated. Don't go anywhere. I want to talk to you when we're done. But
sure.
Thanks a lot for being on the show.
Absolutely.
The Motorcycle Men Podcast is supporting David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. If you would like to help and be part of something that actually makes the difference, donate today to David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. Go to davidsdreamandbelieve.org to donate. Links will be in the show notes and, of course, on the Motorcycle Men website. And the Gold Star Ride Foundation, boys and girls, we're helping families of fallen soldiers and making a difference in the lives of those left behind. So if you'd like to be a part of a great cause and get some heartfelt miles in, go to goldstarride.org and learn how you can participate in the next Gold Star Ride. Thank you for joining me and Brian here in the V-Twin Cafe, where he told us all about his ride to Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. What an epic journey that is, huh? You can learn more about the trip by checking out Brian's Facebook page. Links will be in the show notes and, of course, on the Motorcycle Men website at motomenpc.com. Hey, don't forget to get on over to the Ride with Ted YouTube channel. Watch some of the many videos I have there. And if you would please also like and subscribe, that would be a tremendous help to the channel and, of course, to the podcast. I haven't been producing too many videos lately. I've just been extremely busy, and it is horrifically hot here in North Carolina. So we're trying to avoid being outside in 100-degree temperatures for the moment. All right, so listen, my book, The Road Most Traveled, is available on Amazon in paperback and ebook forms. And also the audiobook is on Audible and other audiobook platforms. Not only that, you can also get the paperback on the Motorcycle Men website. $8 off the Amazon price by buying direct from me. I'll even sign it if you want. So go ahead, get on over to the Motorcycle Men website and go to the shop and scroll down and you'll see my book right there. All right, boys and girls, for the rest of the Motorcycle Men team, thanks for listening. And remember, kids, we say stupid crap so you don't have to. Ride safely, kids.